Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
And welcome to another edition of The Chicago Way. John Cass, your mild-mannered columnist from a great metropolitan newspaper, Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokan Show on WGN, and our friend Scott Stannis, award-winning editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, man.
Hey, guys.
This is fun. Hello.
I got some really depressing news. Two things first, okay? We're going to have Eddie Johnson on later, and I know Jeff is gonna, the superintendent of police as Chicago surpasses its homicide totals. Already,
we're
last
number
year,
one.
We're already
we're
past
number
it.
One.
Unofficially or officially, by the time you hear this,
yeah,
we've already passed it of last year. So that's great. And the cops don't, the gangs don't care. They're not afraid. We'll talk about that. But two things happen I got to ask you guys about. Number one, I go for a coffee and I say latte. Okay, I get a latte and a ham and cheese croissant. Breakfast of champions, right? I got my phone. I look at
That's not French of you.
Look at the Drudge Report. You know what I mean, right? Look at the Tribune.
He reads Le Monde.
Yeah, right on my phone. And the guy pours me a latte, and I look at it, and you know they make that little design on the top of it? This was in the, it was like a big white butt on coffee. It was like shaped like a butt.
Well, you can say thank you. I think it's probably a heart.
How am I supposed to drink that?
I think it's a,
I mean, it's nothing against anyone who would like that.
Who likes butts.
I just don't like butts in my coffee. I had to shake it up.
I don't think you need try it.
Is that weird?
I've been meaning to ask you, we need to do a promo for the show. Can I use that?
No, you can't.
He likes white butts.
But
you
I
can't
just,
lie.
It was a butt, and I had to shake it up. Number two, and that pissed me off.
I think he's just
two,
a bad barista.
On the same day, the Tribune announces in the story.
Yeah.
That the geniuses who separated the newspaper from the building that they built, that we built with our newspaper, is now going to kick us out in 2018, and they're going to create a mixed-use development out of the Tribune Tower.
It's going to be Tribune Tower and Casino. It'll be awesome.
It'll be the tower formerly known as Tribune Tower.
Speaking of butts in your coffee.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
What?
Honest to goodness, I've been in this. I put this on Facebook yesterday. I've worked in this business for 40 years. And coming to the Chicago Tribune.
Really? Your hair's darker than mine. How's that?
And I do nothing to
okay,
it.
Okay, right.
I don't.
Okay, let's go on.
My dad had dark
Tell me about the journalism now in the business.
Okay, 40 years in this business. Coming to the Chicago Tribune was, you could not, that as an editorial cartoonist, you can't get any higher in this business. This was the penultimate. This was it.
Yeah.
And
Indian summer, Grandpa.
And walking into, we can't discuss that, John.
Pass.
Pass. That's an inside joke. Walking into this building every day is a singular honor and a pleasure every single day. It was built, and it looks like, and it is, a cathedral to journalism. And so it still takes my breath away every time I see it from a distance. And the idea that we're going to be working out of some strip mall in Aurora or wherever the hell they
Probably
end
the
up.
Probably the West Loop. We close to. I'll write my column from the girl and the goat.
It's a blossoming area.
The idea, every day I come to this newspaper, and I feel like I'm just a kid in my 20s walking in for the first time. And I look at that newspaper, at the building, the Tribune Tower, Gothic Tower, and I am so proud. It's like, this is a part of Chicago. This is a rock of Chicago. And that's what the newspaper is. It's the rock of Chicago. While everything else, they lie to you. They slap you down. This place stands for something. And what they did, they separated us. They took the newspaper publishing people. They separated into two companies. They gave us all the debt.
Yes.
They took these new guys who bought the WGN, you know, not the GN. You can't say anything because you're kind of conflicted there, Jeff. But they bought they separated it, right?
Yeah.
And then they took all the assets.
Yes.
One of the assets being the
real estate.
Real estate. So, yeah, okay. So I got a mutzah for you guys.
Ooh.
Right here. Nah. I really mean it, and I'm very upset about it, and I shouldn't be because progress is progress and things change. But you know what? One thing that shouldn't change? The Chicago Tribune newspaper should be working in the Chicago Tribune building that the newspaper built in this town. And it frosts my behind worse than that butt that I saw in my coffee.
Yeah.
And hot coffee, by the way. It's like, don't tell me end of an era, all things must pass, all that crap. You know, this is the place that this newspaper built. And because of suits and their little dealings, whatever they did, and the banks that want the money because we went bankrupt because of bad business deals, and then we got out of bankruptcy and everything's getting sold. The people who listen to this thing that we're doing now and the ones who read the newspaper, I promise you that as long as there is like blood in my body and as long as there's blood in Scott Stannis's body and those of us who work here, regardless of political persuasion, so that means four conservative and the rest all liberals, but that's okay. We will do our business, which is journalism.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to keep
it. But it just hurts.
It hurts deeply. I'm walking back. I remember when I first started here, and this is back in 09, and walking back from dinner with my wife, and the cartoonist used to have the top two floors of this tower.
Right.
And, I mean, some great names, John T. McCutcheon, Jeff McNally, Dick Locher, I mean, you know, Carrie Orr, some great names.
And Scott Stannis is right up there with
them. Well, okay.
Seriously.
Thank you. Well, I would walk back, and there'd be a single light bulb up in one, on in one of the offices. And I'd nudge my wife, and this is what the legacy means to someone like us. I'd say, you know what that is? She goes, what? I go, that's all the great cartoonists who used to work here, looking down and going, Stantis? Really? Because it makes you aspire. A place like this makes you be better than you are. It makes you want to be great, like this building. So leaving it, I think, is a tragedy. I am extremely angry with when they split everything up, and again, our Jeff can't say anything here, but I can. They took everything of value and left us with a name in the debt. And so to say I was angry with them to begin with is an understatement. And now we're essentially going to be kicked out of our own building.
Journalism leaves, but the people that put the show there's a show together they put together about hot supermodel witches of Salem wearing revealing clothing. That state. Explain that to me. I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to say my piece. There's no crying for me, Argentina. I mean, we're paid.
Yeah.
We're wage slaves. We work for a living. We do a job, but it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
It's bigger than that. And, okay. So I got that out of my system. Now Jeff can talk.
You.
Jeff, say something now. And say
I have a fun Tribune Tower fact for you.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
My mom's brother took over the family blind making business after my grandfather, and he installed personally, my uncle, the blinds in McCormick's office in the 70s. So there were like some electronic fancy blinds at the time. My family installed those blinds.
I used to, when I first got here, I got to be friends with, everyone talks about Zell and what an awful, terrible, horrible time that was. They're the people who hired me, so I actually have some affection. And the guy he installed as the manager of the building was a good friend, and so my card opened every door. I didn't take advantage. I didn't rifle through anyone's drawers or anything.
You didn't go up for the poker parties and the strip
I did
clubs.
Not, but I did find that
strip shows.
And this it can now be revealed.
That was at the Tribune.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That was the Zell moments, but that's a side issue. Okay. And when I got here, the rumors were that there was a safe room in the colonel's office. And everyone said, oh, that's BS. It's not true. And but I had time and a key. So I went and looked. It's true. There is one up there.
You had an escape route.
It was a safe room.
Kind of like Batman, right?
What's a safe room?
Do you have to go through the fireplace?
You have to go through what looks like a utility door and go up these stairs, and there's a safe room up there.
In case there's a nuclear explosion?
He was afraid that the Bolsheviks or the Unionists or the Roosevelts would have an attack on the building. So he had a safe room put in.
I saw that movie. It was Gang of New York, and those people didn't have a safe room.
They did not.
When the gangs came in.
Yeah,
Speaking of which, we're going to talk later with Eddie Johnson about the gang, so let's hold on that.
All right.
There's another gang I want to talk about, the journalism gang. They're very busy these days.
And how do we keep our balance? That I can tell you in one word. Tradition!
Summer is almost gone and I don't feel any closer to unraveling all these mysteries. I can't pull back the veil. I find a clue, but it leads to 100 more on a never-ending trail. Books and rooms and dreams, oh, nothing's as it seems.
This is what really bothers me about the journalistic. They're so busy with the shaming of the Trump people. Here's how it works. Say Scott Stannis is an elected official, and I'm a businessman who's donated thousands and millions of dollars to the Scott Stannis Foundation through my friend Jeff Carlin, who arranges a meeting, who works with Scott in the government, but he also has a side job with the Stannis Foundation.
It's for the kids.
Yeah, it's for the kids. So then I sit down with you. I get my meeting, and there's no quid pro quo because I got the meeting. You see, if I start asking you, Scott, I will give you $100 million if you only approve this deal. What's the first thing that a politician would think of? The son of a bitch is wired up. That's what he'd say.
Right.
You're wired up. No one talks like that. You want quid pro quo? It's not done that way. I get a picture with Scott, and then I go back to my third world Azerbaijan, wherever I am, and I show, and all my friends see me standing with Scott Stannis, the Secretary of State. And you know what that does? That gives me
juice.
Mojo, juju, right?
Juice. Yeah, it gives you serious juice.
Serious juice. And that's how the corruption works. And this idea that you have to have a smoking gun or a quid pro quo, it's insulting to everybody who understands how it works in Chicago. That's all I have to say.
I think you're absolutely right.
What do you make of that? This journalistic inability to see corruption here. Is it because there's no corruption, or is it that they bought the definition of corruption as expressed by the Clinton campaign? Jeff Carlin! Morton!
I think you're right, John, but I think it's even more base level than that, that you have people are just distracted. It's easy to distract people. And even
what, with flashy little bits of paper?
Yeah.
Little balloons?
Yeah. And guys with bad haircuts,
ducktail haircuts. Let's have more discussion on that. I'm not saying this guy is anything but.
No, but you're right.
Egotist
though.
And perhaps and vulgarian at best. He's not my cup of tea. I keep telling it, but I tweeted it out the other day. This is what I tweeted out as I prepare the week of columns. Right, I start thinking. I tweeted out mocking Trump as loudly as you can does not drive out thoughts, or does it drive out thoughts, that Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation were engaged in influence peddling and corruption. I forgot the exact what I said, but I mean, that was a
right
thrust. And does it? If I mock Trump and mock and shame his voters, do I therefore not have to deal with the fact that she sold access to our government? That's the corruption. She sold the access.
Well, isn't this a continuation of the rents, selling hourly rates at Motel Lincoln Bedroom when they were in the White House the first time?
Bravo, Scott.
This is a pattern we've grown, and the press, as you're right to say, dismisses it as, oh, there's no quid pro quo.
Is it because they think, Scott,
quid pro quo,
they buy the argument that Trump, in their minds, is so terrible that they must do everything possible?
Yeah.
To shame, I don't mind. You want to go after the candidate? Be my guest. But this buying in to the shaming of his voters, constant belittling of the voters who might go for him, is not only dangerous, but it also ignores the fact that Hillary Clinton and her gang are going to walk into this Oval Office if they get elected and begin a rain of if they've already sold the Lincoln bedroom and all that stuff they did mm-hmm. before, and now you have the New York Times on its knees begging them to disassociate from the Clinton Foundation, what does that tell you about what's going to happen in the future if she gets elected?
Well, bringing it back to even Illinois, doesn't it? I mean, now they're saying if she's president, we're going to disassociate with the foundation. Or, you know, Bill's going to step down. Yeah. I'm going to step down. Chelsea needs a job because she's really not qualified to do anything else. Doesn't that ring true of, remember a few years back when, Lisa was thinking of running for governor, Lisa mm-hmm. Madigan, mm-hmm. and her daddy refused to step down as speaker, and they said it would be unseemly to have the speaker and the governor in the same family, but it's okay to have the speaker and the attorney general in the same family.
Jeff Carlin, what say you, sir?
So I have a conspiracy theory. I've been watching Mr. Robot. You guys familiar with that show?
I've seen the commercials.
It's very good. It's
I'm still studying the period of 1452 to 3 when the Byzantium fell to the Turks. So I'm back a little bit.
Oh, my brother has actually got his master's in that.
There you go. I should talk to him then.
Yeah, he's way smarter than me.
So, Jeff, conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory. So, Mr. Robot, if you haven't checked it out, check it out. It's very good. So I was watching it last night, and it's all about conspiracies and that sort of fun stuff. So my theory now is that, remember we used to talk about how Trump was the, you know, paid by the Clintons, and, you know, he's a Clinton supporter, and he's trying to come in and, you know, make sure they get elected. I think it's the inverse now. I think it's actually the Clintons are trying to get him elected, and that no matter, they're trying so hard and they just can't do it. They come up, you know, all this stuff, all the skeletons they knew they had in their closet are all coming to the surface, and the media is, they're like, we underestimated the media's ability to report on scandal.
How's this one, Jeff? This is not, and I don't have to go to Mr. Robot, although I do like your conspiracy theory. I love it. I love all conspiracy theories. Here's one. There are Republicans who've stood up publicly and said, I cannot accept Trump, right?
One of them.
You're one of them. He's one of them.
I'm Gary Johnson.
Okay. But there are many, many like Scott Stennis who just can't, and they disavow Trump, right? For reasons that they are of principle. Right?
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned them, so.
What of the where are the Democrats to stand up and say, Mrs. Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, this whole business is beneath contempt, and therefore I cannot support Mrs. Clinton?
They were Bernie supporters.
Where are they? Where are they now? Where are they? Where are the elected officials? Where are they standing?
Yeah, there's no.
I don't hear anybody saying anything. Where I hear, all I do is I read the papers, and not just ours, but ours is one of them. I read every day how Trump sucks and his voters are stupid. Every day in all the papers, not just this, all of them. Where is the Democrat standing up to say, I cannot abide the corruption in the Clintons, the lying, the selling of influence? Where are those people? Where are they?
Jeff?
They're afraid of Donald Trump.
So the Hillary Clinton's campaign is so brilliant that it gave a two-dimensional reason so that people can avoid Trump and protect her without even discussing her problems. Scott is not a Trumper, a never Trumper, but he'll talk about Clinton's problems. Where are the Democrats to talk? Are they corrupt? Is that their party?
I think they're just hiding from Donald Trump.
I think the party has become, what do I get?
Yeah.
And if they say a word, or it's just like Chicago politics. You say anything, you go off the reservation, you don't get anything. You get jacked.
Oh, could you imagine the Clinton retribution if, let's say, a moderate, if they're assuming there is one, a Democratic senator came out and said exactly what you said?
Like Al Franken, right, Mr. Progressive, I stand above the fray. Where is he? Where is he?
He was on stage with Sarah Silverman at the convention.
Yeah, he spoke there.
Disavowing Bernie and saying, well, you know, we had a good run.
Shut up.
Let's shut up,
you Bernie people.
Yeah.
But the Bernie people, don't forget, they weren't aghast at the corruption. They were aghast that she's, you know, never met a war she didn't like.
Yeah.
She should be wearing a NASCAR outfit because of all the corporations that she have, you know, given her tons of money.
But that's corruption. I mean,
of course it is.
Same vein.
We've criticized Hillary, or I have, and Jeff has sort of stood on the outside watching, right? I haven't heard you denounce her, my friend. My
there's no way I'd want her for president. No.
All right, good.
I don't want her. I don't want Trump.
That's right. All I want is a constitution.
I want Gary Johnson.
Let's get 4 years of just...
Why don't you want Gary Johnson?
Because I don't think Gary Johnson can win the election, and it really is coming. I haven't decided how I'm going to... My original plan was to not vote.
To reactivate your Canadian citizenship?
Half Canadian. I'm a halfie. Half Canadian.
Is that true?
Oh, Canada, my home and native land. Yes. I wrote a column last week explaining how I was strip searched by the Canadian Border Patrol, even though my uncle was a member of parliament in Ottawa, because they thought I was a drug dealer.
That's an amazing story.
Because I was driving a new Trans Am.
Clean
new Trans Am mint. And we told them, I said, I'm going fishing in Kenora. And they said, where's your fishing gear? And there was one fishing rod in the back in the pristine car and one tiny tackle box, like the kind you use for bass plugs in a condo, you know, when you have a condo pond, you know, like a condo pond. You go, it's like a tiny one. I said I was going to get stuff there.
You bought at the Ventura?
Yeah.
Or Venture, rather.
The concierge.
And they actually strip search
from the
you?
Old Tribune when we used to run things properly. What?
They actually strip search you. Did they dim the lights and put on romantic music? This may have been something totally different, John.
I'll tell you this. There was a matron with a ducktail haircut and the neck the size of a linebacker leading my wife, my future wife, away.
Canada's finest.
And she's like, John. And Betty's like, John.
Oh.
I was like, sick, man. And I still love Canada. So put up that wall. Right, Jeff?
America's hat.
All right. Can we switch for a second? Can we talk about something serious? What is with Wiener?
Oh, what is wrong with that guy?
What is the deal with this?
Was he not getting
cockroach?
Help?
Is he a cockroach or what?
Well, I'm not going to use that word describing this guy, but
it's mean to cockroaches, John. What have they ever done?
They don't send selfies of their junk.
Mr. Ecumenicism today. All right, what is going on with you?
What do you mean?
I want to see some outrage on Wiener.
Oh, God, yeah. No, he's an idiot. He's a jackass and a buffoon.
I mean, first off...
But what do we expect? I mean...
No, but this goes far beyond what we expect. This is a guy who took...
Put the tinfoil hats on now. Go!
No, he takes a picture of his junk with his kid sleeping in the background. That's as messed up, dude.
So who's
his
the
junk
woman
just happened to be there.
Who's the woman he is texting?
Someone, an admirer, is how it was said
right.
in the
a
press.
Trump supporter.
Okay, so put on your...
yeah, Trump supporter.
No, she is.
Really?
No way.
Yes, she is.
Put on your tinfoil hat here, and your Jack Bauer hats. if I'm a foreign intelligence officer, I have a woman who's kind of hot.
Sure.
Doing a texting thing with this weirdo, and he is married to who now? Huma? Wasn't he up until a few days ago?
Yeah, no, they were married.
They were
working things out. It was love.
And Huma is who?
She's chief of staff, or I'm not sure
chief
what her position
staff.
Is. She'll be the chief of staff to the president if Hillary wins.
She's Hillary's gal right Friday, hand. Right?
Yeah.
And they even wear the same clothes, and they wear the same outfits, and they walk around together, like mother and daughter, almost. And and so...
Yes?
Is there a security issue?
There are so many issues here. I can't go into too many details, but I've been shouted down by liberals because I have the temerity to mention that this speaks not just to her personal life, but to how she and her boss deal with relationships with sexual predators.
Because he's like a sexy little cat putting his junk on the phone, and the old man is like a Randy first laddie, with the devil in the blue dress grabbing the recently widowed Kathleen Wiley by the Gluteus Maximus,
she
came for consultation about how she would survive after her husband died, right?
Yeah.
I think. And this is who we're going to put in the office. Either that or the Trump people, where we're going to have, like, a dynasty. You know, we need a new dynasty show, right, with the hot daughter and the one kind of daughter that's kind of Marla Maple-y. She's not part of the clique. You know, it's
she's not
just
part
like
of the pride of lions.
Right? It's just, oh, yeah.
Speaking of conspiracies, do you know about Lolita Flight? Have you followed this story? It's not obviously not getting much coverage. I'm not sure if it has any
legs. Is this the Fantasy Island sex thing?
This is a guy who apparently has been convicted of stuff and has an airplane. Wealthy.
Assaulting.
Oh, yeah.
Children.
And has an airplane. Lolita Flights are, he has young girls, right. Prostitutes, money.
Jeffrey Epstein, right?
Yeah, I believe that's the name. And he... And the number one person who's flown on that plane the most, say it with me, kids, Bill Clinton.
No, this is a joke, right?
No, look up Lolita Flight.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
So
he used to fly. He used to fly important people around the world.
They're sex flights.
And from South Carolina to D.C.
What, with 16-year-old prostitutes?
Yeah.
Or younger.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bill Clinton was on there 27, 28 times?
Yeah. That's my
I feel your pain and your breasts.
Yeah.
I thought that was the kind of stuff that's on, like, InfoWars. When you click on it, you want to click off back. You click back and you hope you're not. You know, that no one will know that you were there.
You ever know when your internet provider is like, oh,
you know, like,
report this guy to the FBI.
Like the clickbait, like, what does Marsha Brady look like now?
Right, you know, right,
which
right.
I did click on it. Okay.
Of course.
She looks great.
I couldn't help it.
Look great. I also would like to reprimand Hillary Clinton for invoking Alex Jones. We were just talking about conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. That was her plan. That was her big plan to scare people back to the middle or back to over to her side.
Alex Jones is...
Alex Jones is
the InfoWars.
InfoWars is a
he's
talk
like a Cockney British guy.
Oh,
yeah, it's a fake British accent. He's American.
Oh, really?
Is that right?
He's an American, for sure.
And they talk about Muslims taking over Europe.
He's a conspiracy theorist to the utmost degree, but he's ultra right. And as Hillary said, alt right.
Worse than the guy at night, the crazy guy at night on the
George
old station.
Nori?
No, you had me interview him once. What's his name? Or maybe Mallory did. Savage?
Like, worse than Savage. Because at least Savage is intelligent and he knows what he's talking about.
He knows food. He knows food and dogs. So I like
Alex Jones says that contrails are, familiar contrails, they're vapor.
Yeah, from planes.
From planes, yeah.
That doesn't exist.
Right. He says that those are actually chemtrails and that the government is using them to control people. He also says that fluoride in the water is being used to control people. Yeah, he says that he thinks that Obama is a plant from the Muslim Brotherhood.
So if I put on the special sunglasses, mm-hmm. I can see the real, like, the evil aliens as opposed to the regular people?
Exactly.
And they're all yuppies.
Right.
The ones who sold the Tribune,
exactly.
They're the aliens, right? I saw that with Rowdy Piper.
There you go.
It's a John Carpenter film, I think, or something, right?
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum. Oh, shit.
Quid pro quo. I need an answer. Is it yes or no? Quid pro quo. You better give me what I want or go. And don't you lie to me or else I'll know. Quid pro quo.
One more thing, Jeff Carlin. The National Anthem and Colin Kaepernick. He doesn't say he sits down for the National Anthem. He sucks as a quarterback.
Right. That's the bigger problem.
And now is he ready to be a Democratic Liberal Congressman in
San Francisco?
San Francisco, representing homeless guys who, you know, use the sidewalks for their laboratories? That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
You tell me.
I honestly don't care. I mean, he's a quarterback, a subpar quarterback, and he's standing up for something that he supposedly believes in or has knowledge of, and it's nothing. Yeah. He's it's his right as an American to do whatever
he
wants.
It's not the issue.
But I don't care. I take zero interest in it.
Okay, well, Jeff says zero interest.
Oh, I have a lot of interest. I did a cartoon about it today.
Yes, you did.
It was the guys raising the flag at Iwo Jima, and he's sitting there with his back to him.
Right.
I think it's a douchebag move. There's no question about that. You know, he has a right to do it. God
By extension, are you saying that Jeff Carlin is a douchebag?
A little bit.
I don't support him.
No, I know. I'm just doing that journalism trick.
What a great country where he can do this. And, you know, I applaud that. But I have a right to say the guy's a total douche. I mean, and this is what he is. And, you know, I'm not going to stand up until things are what? You know, I mean, it's
he makes millions of dollars a year.
I don't know if a paycheck dismisses you from having a right to free speech.
Well, let's put it this way. He's grown up having his butt kissed every day of his life as a star athlete in America. That's what happens to them. Right, Jeff? Mm-hmm. Right, Scott?
Yeah.
These aren't humble creatures. These aren't boxers.
They're not journalists.
Hockey players are the most down-to-earth of all of them because no one told them they're special.
Right.
Okay? But football players, different story in this country. And for him to do that, it's all about Colin Kaepernick. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, he has the freedom. What did you say? He has the right to do that, right? Mm-hmm. He has the right not to say the national, the national anthem. But guess what I have the right to do? I have the right to give you a big fat mootsa right in your face.
Nah!
Kaepernick. Nah!
Blow on it.
Blow on this. Fisa edo. Let's hear you say it, boys.
Fisa edo.
That's pretty good. Fisa edo.
Fisa edo.
Not you. Not you, Jeff. Not any listeners. But Colin Kaepernick, Wiener. I'm thinking, and anyone who thinks that, like, quid pro quo means something for corruption.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. But I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil.
Our next guest might have the worst job in the world. His name is Eddie Johnson. He's superintendent of Chicago Police. Good morning, Superintendent.
Good morning, John.
Now, when we met a few weeks ago, first thing I asked you was, do you ever watch The Wire? And you said, yeah. Does it feel like The Wire now?
Yeah, it does. But I tell you, I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm actually enjoying being superintendent of Chicago Police.
What's so much fun about it?
Well, I think CPD is the greatest law enforcement agency in this country, and I love the city of Chicago, so it's an honor and a privilege for me to be leading what I think and consider the greatest police department in the country.
We are talking at a time when the homicide rates are always high in the summer, and particularly this year, deadliest August in 20 years. It hasn't beaten the 1991 number of 122, but I think we're at 90 now or thereabouts.
Yes.
And we're still looking towards Labor Day weekend as we speak. Why so high?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into violent crime in a city like Chicago. You know, you got the socioeconomic ills across the country that are affecting the impoverished neighborhoods. But I think one thing that's unique about Chicago is that we do a poor job of holding our repeat gun offenders accountable for the crimes that they commit.
All right, let's get right to it because that's the meat of the issue. Most of your violent criminals, most of the people pulling the triggers, or let's say a great percentage, are people with gun violations, or they just got paroled, or they walk out after a year or something.
Correct.
Like that, right?
So let me tell you this so we can put this in context. We have a list called the Strategic Subject List. That's the SSL list. 1,400 individuals out of a city of maybe 2.7 million people. 1,400 individuals are driving the violence in our city. These 1,400 are on this list not because of their race, ethnicity, or gender, or where they live. It's strictly because of their previous contact with police in terms of arrest, gun arrests, and things of that nature. So these 1,400 individuals, and let me just to give you this one last stat. So far this year in 2016, 85% of our fatal and non-fatal gunshot victims, 85% of them are on that list. So what that tells you is that those individuals choose that lifestyle, and we have to do a better job of holding them accountable. If 85% of them are on that list, and we cut that down to 40%, imagine where our gun violence would go.
All right. Here's what I see from the political side. The mayor and a couple of the legislators came up with the plan to have, this is before your tenure, before you came in as a superintendent, came up with a plan to have a mandatory minimum sentencing for gun crimes.
Okay.
Carrying a gun, you go away for, I think, 5 years or something like that, right? Well, whatever it was at the time, okay. Three, something like that, a real number. And the judges would not have leeway, so these guys would not be coming out as early. The Black Caucus shot it down for reason because they didn't trust the police or their own political issues within their community. When is that going to be revived? And what I'm thinking about doing is calling these guys out.
Well, there's legislation on the table right now that we're hoping to get passed through. So here's the thing. You know,
That Kwame Raoul is saying.
Yes.
But it's not the same as it was.
No, it's not. It's not mandatory sentencing. It'd be more presumptive sentencing. So what we're trying to focus on now is to hold repeat gun offenders accountable. So instead of judges sentencing them on the low end of the sentencing bar, they'll start at mid-range to the high end. So anybody that gets caught or a second, third, fourth time with a gun could be sentenced anywhere from 3 years to 14 years.
a second or so I can have a gun twice and still walk.
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah, I do. I do. I understand that. You know, and I think a lot of the pushback from the Black Caucus before was because they didn't want to see innocent people that just may happen to have a gun for some reason. You know, we don't have to go into all of that. But we took care of a lot of that by passing the concealed carry laws in Illinois. So that should take care of most of that. But I got to tell you, John, until these repeat gun offenders recognize that we're serious about holding them accountable, we're going to continue to see this gun violence.
Agreed. And if I'm a young man within the profile, say 16 to 23, male, black, in those districts, Englewood, Harrison, et cetera, where you have the big spike.
Right.
And I know that other people are carrying guns. It might sound terrible to listen to this, but but it's almost like a terrible logic that then I have to have a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
And unless these people are taken off the street, what are you going to do but clean up bodies?
Right, and I think that was some of the concern of some of our legislators. But I got to be honest, if you are a leader in Chicago and in Illinois, if you think watching these people get shot and killed is okay, then you shouldn't be a leader because it's not okay. Any amount of gun violence in the city is unacceptable, and we can do something about it. And I that's why I'm spearheading this along with Senator Raul and Zaleski to try to get this gun bill passed. So I'm going to need the people of Chicago to help me with that.
What you need is also the mothers in those communities, the ones who cry and say, my son's not a gangbanger when he's got a tattoo.
Yeah,
and all that other stuff. You've got to get them behind you, too, right?
Yeah.
To give those politicians cover?
Absolutely.
Am I not reading this right?
Absolutely. You know, in the black community especially, I trust me, you know, I grew up in the black community. I live in the black community now. So I'm not naive to the concerns of the black community. But at the end of the day, my job is to make it safe for them. And that's one of the tools that I think can help provide some of that safety.
What about if I write a column demanding that they hold a special session?
I would
just come down there. What would you say about a special session in the legislature to get this done now, to give the people who are in the city, in these violent districts, a chance to at least look at something being done?
I would love that because, to be honest, John, there's a sense of urgency with me. There's frustration and urgency, and the sooner we can get this done, the better. I don't know what we're waiting for. You know, we had 90 homicides in the month of August, a 20-year high for 1 month. That's ridiculous. You know, and anybody that thinks it's okay to watch things like this occur, you know, I don't know what to say to you. That it's unacceptable. So if you can do that, that'd be great. And if we need to go to Springfield, I'm on the first thing smoking going down there because this is a sense of urgency. The longer we wait, the more people we're going to see shot and killed in our streets.
The other day, I was at a funeral of a man you know. I mean, his son.
Right.
Trey Dennis is the 19-year-old victim of a homicide. Came home from school. One of the success stories, one of the hopes of Chicago. St. John University did everything right, and he was shot. He came home to surprise his mother, who was ill, and he was shot to death on the porch with a friend of his that was from you know, his older days. No criminal record on this young man. No, nothing. Everything good about this young man. And it didn't get the kind of media that I thought it should. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I did. You know, because now if a police officer had engaged in misconduct, we'd get tons of media coverage on that. This young kid was doing everything the right way. And I know his father personally. We were police officers in the 6th District some years ago. He's a good man who was raising a good kid. And that's what I need people to understand. This type of thing can reach out and touch you when you least expect it. You know, so it's imperative that we get this done as quickly as we can because we have to do something to stop this gun violence in our streets.
Is there anything happening on that case?
There's been movement on it. So hopefully we can bring it to a successful resolution to give the family some sense of closure to it, because I can't imagine what that officer is going through right now, losing his only son. That's got to be tough. And my job, my challenge is to stop that type of thing from happening.
We're speaking to Eddie Johnson, Superintendent of Chicago Police. Jeff Carlin, Do you have a question?
I do, Superintendent. Thank you again for joining us. With school picking up here, a lot of emphasis put on the idea of the Safe Passage program. Is it helping? Do you think, is it something that's worthwhile? What's your take on it?
Well, yeah, Safe Passage. Listen, it's our challenge as a city to make sure our children can get back and forth to school without having to worry about being victims of violent crime. So, you know, we've had great success with the Safe Passage routes, and I expect that will continue.
In the five districts I'm going to mention, Englewood, Harrison, Chicagoland, Deering, Austin, three on the south side, two on the west side. You've had spikes of homicides big time over last year. What is driving it? Is it dope? What is it?
Well, some of it is narcotics driven. Some of it, believe it or not, John, a lot of our violence in terms of gangs is not so much gang related. The people that committed are gang members, but a lot of it is personal driven and is social media driven. They get on social media and taunt each other, but instead of going to fist fights, they go straight for a pistol. So, you know, and let's face it, a lot of the older gang members, they recognize that juvenile gang members don't get the stiff penalties that the older ones do. So they use them to carry out their nefarious activities.
So it's a Twitter war that turns to gunfire.
It is. It is. It absolutely is. You know, and that's our challenge. And we do our best to, get out in front of those types of things. But let's face it, you see somebody at the gas station and they look at you the wrong way and you say, oh, you disrespected me. And the next thing you know, somebody shot dead. That's ridiculous. You know,
having that forever.
Yeah. But I will say this, especially in the African-American community, I need parents to step up and be parents. You know, I need fathers to step up and be fathers. You know, I understand the social ills of our society is, you know, largely contributing factors to this violence. But at the same time, you still have a choice to make. You still know right from wrong.
They know what's right for wrong, but they don't do the right. That's yep. I mean, they're not raising their own kids.
Right, right.
Daddies aren't involved. And moms sometimes are. I remember when I started the business, grandma could be counted on. Now, sometimes grandma's on the pipe.
Yeah, you know, it's just
whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. But those aren't issues that we can't correct. We just have to start somewhere.
One way to start is in clearance rates. Chicago police have a very low. I don't know what it is now. 20 something in the 20s.
Yeah, high 20s or a low 30, somewhere around there.
Why is it so low? And is that also a function of not enough detectives or too many young ones or what?
You know, we can always use more police officers. You know, there's no police executive in the world that would turn down additional resources. But I will say this. One of the things that hurt us with that is the community involvement. It's like the murder that happened last weekend, Nikea Aldridge, Dwayne Wade's cousin.
Right.
The community stepped up and helped us bring that to a resolution. So I understand that there's a lack of trust between the community and the police department, and I am working hard to facilitate that trust and gain it back, because I do believe that the police is only as strong as the belief that the community has in it. But we need people. You very seldom have police officers that actually witness a homicide or a person being shot. So we need the people that live in those communities to step up and do the right thing.
Speaking of that Aldridge case, the press accounts tell me that the two shooters said, who were on one, I think both had gun charges, they're habitual criminals, brothers, and one walked early on. One was on an ankle bracelet.
Both of them were on parole. One had an ankle bracelet on that between certain hours, yeah, he turned it off. So that goes back to the repeat offender thing. One of them got out about 90 days ago out of jail on parole. 90 days later, he shoots, he participates in this young woman getting killed who wasn't bothering anybody.
Well, she wasn't bothering anybody, but the press accounts tell me that I read that the guy that they were shooting at gave them a look. That's all. It sounded really, really ridiculous until you start thinking, when we cover a story, we want to have, like, the bad guys and the innocent victim.
Right.
When in reality, a lot of this gunfire is taking place, they may have known him. Did they know him?
No.
Was he in they actually pulled their guns and started shooting because of a look,
so,
not because of who he was?
Right.
His history?
That's about right. You know, just because they looked at each other, they knew he wasn't from the neighborhood. So they saw him dropping off some women, and not to go into the specifics of the case, but that's basically it. That murder occurred because of the way one person looked at another person.
How long have you been a police officer here?
28 years now.
So back when you started, and I mentioned this in a column recently, there was a police department was just losing control of its own budget. The mayor of Chicago at the time, Mayor Daley, sends over his budget man, Ed Bedore, and slowly but surely the department started losing its autonomy from City Hall. I mean, it didn't have political autonomy, but there was budgetary and,
right.
and organizational autonomy. And they had units called gang crimes. And the gang crimes units, and I knew a lot of the guys, and so did you. I didn't know if you ever worked in that unit. It was a big unit, and they had human intelligence.
Right.
I didn't mention the superintendent that had to kill it because I didn't want to put him in a, you know.
Right.
I mean, Terry Hilliard, but it wasn't, you know, Terry didn't really have a choice in the matter on that one. But I think that the loss of gang crimes was huge. Do you think so, or was that wrong?
Well, you know, you do need that human intelligence and that human touch to stay ahead of this stuff. But at the same time, we've gotten really good at using technology to help us predict who these folks are. So I think, you know, one hand washes the other when it goes to that type of thing.
But when you want when you want the community to talk, and usually we often in the media oversimplify a situation.
Mm-hmm.
You want the community to talk, but they're not going to talk to some kid that they don't know in a blue shirt. What they would talk to the gang crimes copper that knew them and knew their brother and knew their older cousin.
Yeah.
And then maybe that kid gets caught with a gun or something, and he might give up some information on a homicide a little easier, knowing that if Eddie Johnson was that police officer, you would keep your word in terms of what would happen in court.
Right.
That's what I'm talking
about. Yep, and that's a valid point, John. And see, now, because we've gotten away from the gang specialist type of thing, that we rely on the beat cars now to develop that same type of relationship. When I was a beat cop in the 6th District, my partner and I knew a lot of the people that worked on our beat, so they would give us information like that. So we encourage the police officers now to engage in that. And that's a form of community policing, which we should have as a philosophy of the department, not a strategy.
One thing that should be changed, in my opinion, I've never been a police officer, but I talked to enough. This agreement with the ACLU sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but what's happened is your street stops have dropped off, I don't know what, 80%, 70%. Cops aren't stopping these kids because they got to fill out a report that takes, I don't know, a real long time, but that's not the issue. The issue is these cops tell me not, they write all this stuff down, and now they're scared that something might blow back at them later and they'll be in court.
Right. You know, law enforcement hasn't been scrutinized like we are right now. I mean, all over the country. So those are valid concerns of the officers. But I would tell you this, the cops are still out there engaging because our gun arrests indicate that they're still out there engaging. We're closing in on 6,000 recovered guns this year. That's twice as many as New York and L.A. combined. We've recovered one illegal handgun for every year of the hour 2016. So that lets me know that the officers are out there still engaging. But you're right, that particular agreement with the ACLU, it is a cause for concern for a lot of officers.
Would you like it changed?
If I could get rid of it altogether, I wouldn't be upset if it changed. But what I do know is that I do expect for the officers to be professional, and it's about stopping the right people for the right reasons at the right time. So as long as we do that, we'll be fine.
One of the things that's happening this weekend, the union again called for its members not to do overtime.
Right.
Especially now you have 90 homicides, at least that we know of, and more to come. And the Labor Day weekend, which is long, and some people start drinking early, and by the end of the day, things happen. So
right.
What do you make of the union discouraging the police officers from overtime.
I tell you this, John. I won't get upset at the union for encouraging the officers and their members to spend more time with their families. But in terms of the police out on the street, the best way for the police, myself, to support other police officers is to be out there for them in times like this. So rest assured, we'll have adequate resources out there. You know, but I understand the FOP's encouragement of the officers to spend some time with their families. So I'm not opposed to
but
that.
But is it families or is it that they're upset the way that they've been treated by City Hall before you came in?
Well, I mean, that could have something to do with it, but you'd have to ask them about that. But
well, they say that, right?
That they're upset with City Hall?
Well, that they're upset with the whole, you know, they think that they're on, you know, the
well, they do have right now. Yeah, they do have some concern about how the community views them right now, because law enforcement has never been under scrutiny like they are now. And that's a concern, and that's a valid concern. But one of my challenges is to keep encouraging them, because we do still have a lot of supporters out there. It's just that the supporters aren't as vocal as the non-supporters.
Some of the non-supporters were very vocal in a video that was attached to my column this week or a few days ago. It was a stop in on the south side. I think it was in on Justine, where my Aunt Mary used to live. Mm-hmm. And these were a line of kids, line of young men confronting the police, swearing at them. You saw the video, or yeah. You've seen other situations like that. Cops I talked to, the old-timers, guys who were veterans when you came on, guys who've done 30 years, Bob Angone and Detective O'Connor and others, tell me that stuff never happened that way.
Yeah, I will have to tell you, I've never seen this level of disrespect in terms of a lot of the communities in their contact with the police, and that is... That is a pause for concern for us. You know, that video clearly illustrated these young people having no regard for the police out there. And so that is a tough hurdle to climb. You know, I don't know where that attitude started from. I just know we need to change it.
Well, maybe it started from history, but also the Laquan McDonald thing didn't help.
Nah, that didn't help. And that's something that's going to take years for us to get, you know, past. But I think we're moving in the right direction.
You moved to fire several officers who were involved, not with the shooting, the shooter as well, the alleged shooter, Mr. Van Dyke, but also other officers that were involved in what seems to be a cover-up.
Well, you know, like I said, those officers, they still deserve due process, and we'll get to that. But the bottom line is that we learned a lot from the Laquan McDonald incident, and our challenge is to ensure that nothing like that occurs again.
What did you learn?
Well, I learned that we can do things better. You know, CPD can do things better. And, you know, I have to say, the majority of police out there working day in and day out are trying to do the right thing. Are we perfect? No. Do we make mistakes? Yes. I don't know any organization that doesn't make mistakes. So here's the bottom line. If the officers are out there engaging in inappropriate behavior or intentional misconduct, they'll be held accountable for it. If they make honest mistakes, they'll still be held accountable. But then it's my job to make sure they get the training and coaching and mentoring they need and get them back out on the street.
I would think that that as a veteran, longtime police officer, you have your own views on training and how things should be changed. The incident of the cops firing at that car, the young man stealing the car, and then he was...
The O'Neill incident. The
O'Neill incident.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about maybe changes in training that you'd like to see?
I think we could do a better job of training our officers. You know, we want to be the most professional and best trained force in the country. So in looking at that video, I saw what might be some policy violations, not making judgment on the shooting itself. But I just think that we can do a better job training our officers.
You're not supposed to shoot at a moving car. But when you came out of the academy as a rookie, were you put in a squad or with a veteran officer and you were the kid that had to go get the coffee and do all the grunt work and stuff?
Yeah, when
right?
I came out on the street, yeah, that's how it was. You know, you would train with a veteran officer. And for the most part, we try to keep it like that because there's a wealth of experience you can learn from a veteran officer. But again, you know, a training is a perishable skill. So the further away you get from your training, you know, you lose some of those things. So we must do a better job in training our officers.
Do we have to ask you? I know I can't keep you forever, and I could, but I mean, I'd like to, but you got a job to do, and so do I. What kind of toll does this, thinking of being superintendent and actually being superintendent are two different deals. So what's it like for you personally? I mean, I know you say, I love this job and I love the police department. And I understand all that. We got that. But the toll on you inside.
Yeah, some days are difficult, you know, that Laquan McDonald, the whole situation isn't easy for me, you know, but because I've come up through the ranks for 28 years, I'm accustomed to controversy. So that helps, but it's still, you know, I have to juggle the rank and file, and I have to juggle the rank and file's feelings with the feelings of the general public, you know, and those two balls when I'm juggling, they never really line up and get in sync with each other. So it's some days are difficult, you know, and you have to make hard decisions. But at the end of the day, I always try to do the right thing.
You mentioned two balls, but what about the third one, which is politics in City Hall?
Yeah, well, I mean,
you're in there. You come in after McCarthy. It's almost like the mayor has to let you do your thing.
Yeah.
There can't be that much interference. On the other hand, I hear him and I hear him say stuff about individual officers, and I'm thinking, and you read this on Second City Blog, are you going to let, is Eddie doing, is Superintendent Johnson allowed to do his job, or is the mayor going to step in on small, you know,
well, individual
officers? Because then the Second City Blog and all those guys get upset. And you get the heat.
Well, I can tell you this. When the mayor approached me about taking the job and we talked about it, I told him, I don't know how to be a politician, but I do know how to be a cop. And one of the things that it has to be is if you want me to do this job, you have to let me do it. You know, you have to let me run CPD. And I have to be honest, to this point, he's been a really good partner with me in tapping down the crime. But in terms of the day-to-day decisions and how CPD runs, that's up to me and my command staff.
Eddie Johnson, superintendent of Chicago Police, one of the toughest jobs in the country right now. Thanks for stopping in with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everybody, for Jeff Carlin and me and everyone else. It's been another edition of the Chicago Way, and we'll talk to you next week.